This is Jeremy from Driving Wheel. You are listening to Rock Paper Podcast. Turn it up.
Everybody, Shane Presley here with the Rock Paper Podcast. I'm sitting down here with Jeremy from Driving Wheel.
Howdy, howdy.
And you can catch Driving Wheel Friday, January 23rd at Moonshine Blues Bar in St. Charles, Missouri.
We're looking forward to that very, very much. We love the food. We love the atmosphere. We love playing there.
Yeah, it's a great spot, man. That's I'm so glad that they're bringing something like that to St. Charles, where you kind of get these all the blues bars down on Broadway and stuff, and where it's coming to St. Charles County. And
we love the area out there, and we love, like I said, we love the atmosphere of Moonshine, especially, you know, kind of the blues in the basement type atmosphere is really cool. Just the whole vibe of the place, and it sounds good down there, right. You know. There's can't be enough good things said about Moonshine and just everything, you know, their location on Main Street in St. Charles, mm-hmm. It's right by everything. It's a really cool spot, and we're excited to come back. We're glad that they're bringing us back, you know, to be on that, you know, roster. I mean, there's some pretty big names that play that place, you mm-hmm. know, so we're kind of really happy that we get to be included in that, you know, that says something. So.
Yeah, for sure, man. I know Brian, he thinks highly of you guys. We've talked a lot of times about, trying to, I kind of give my two cents in helping book shows there a little bit sometimes.
Awesome.
Just giving him suggestions, and I was trying to suggest you for a show, and he's like, he would love to have you guys there, but he didn't think the pairing would work or whatever. And it's like, no, it will, but hopefully.
Well, the cool thing about, you know, that place that, you know, and really whenever we get to play like that much in a night, you get to kind of stretch out and you get to just show a little bit more and do different things. And you know, in a 1 hour set, you know, we kind of have to condense it. And, you know, whereas when you play all night, you get to just kind of, you know, turn it into a roadhouse for a night, you know, which is, you know, we're really good at just, you know, grooving and jamming like that. And you know, we want to, you know, like Ryan always says, we want it to be like Samuel L. Jackson and Black Snake Moan, you know, where you just, you know, everybody's grooving, you know, you're into your own thing. You don't have to be looking at the band, you know, you can be dancing or face down, you know, or however you want to do it, you know, but you're doing your thing, you know, everybody in the place is feeling it. And that's kind of, you know, the vibe we want to bring. And Moonshine's a great, great place to put that vibe across.
Yeah, I think last time I saw you guys there, you did Tracy Chapman, Give Me One Reason. And I don't think I've heard you guys do that before. And it was kind of a different take on it, and I really liked it a lot.
It shows up every now and again. Yeah. We like doing that one that way because it's different. It's fun, and it's got kind of a, you know, we kind of turn it swampy and groovy.
It's still recognizable.
Yeah, it's still recognizable. People like it. Yeah. Yep. And so it's got all those elements that, you know, maybe keep it interesting for us to play, that we can do our own twist on it.
Right.
And then it's interesting for everybody else because they're like, oh, well, we know this song, but it's different, you know, or whatever. So, you know, yeah, we get to do that, you know, more in a place like Moonshine than we do at, say, you know, the Blue Note or Mojo's or whatever. You know, if we play a cover or two, we've got to, you know, pick one or two and, like, that's that, you know, as opposed to, whereas, you know, we could play all of Gary Clark Jr.'s album if we wanted to, you know, and we have before. Yeah. So there you go.
Is he a pretty big influence on you guys, Gary?
Well, I mean, influence I don't want to say influence. Like, our biggest influences are from when we were kids.
Right.
You know? But as far as just, like, a reaffirmation of, like, hey, you know, you guys are kind of on the right track, or, like, this music still has some validity to some people. He was a huge kind of shot in the arm, I think. And so, you know, along the lines of that band, so are bands like Blackberry Smoke, the Steepwater Band, we kind of look at them more as along the lines as, you know, bands that we want to be like today.
Sure.
You know, like, that's a good model for how to put your band across and how to present things and how to do your music your way. You know, and that's ultimately what we want to do. We want to find a way to do the music that we like to do and do it our way and not have, you know, have as little interference in that as possible. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that, it's fun to see, like, you know, especially bands that we've, like, loved for a long time that nobody really knew about that are all, you know, like Blackberry Smoke, every time they come to town, it's bigger and better and, like, and, you know, more people are known who they are. Like, I remember following them for a while, and they were playing, like, the old Rock House in St. Louis, and then they went, you know, now they're playing the Pageant now, so every time they come to town, it's bigger. And
dude, the first time I saw them, there was, like, 50 people at Knuckleheads in Kansas City, I mean, and then the next time they came, the place was packed, and there was 500 people there.
Right.
And then, all of a sudden, they're selling out the Granada in Lawrence, and like you said, you know, I was shocked when I went to the old Rock House, and it was sold out. Like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, you know, something's really happening here, and it's just kind of taken off from there. And, I mean, kudos to them. They've proven that if you stick to your guns, you know, and they've been on the road for 13 years, you know, and, I mean, I've talked to those guys, and I've lucky enough that, you know, I've got to hang out with them a bit, and, you know, they're really just now getting able to really, you know, do it, like pay all their bills and take care of their families the way they want to and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time and it's a lot of hard work, you know, but, you know, they're proof that if you hang on and you stick to your guns that eventually, you know, it'll pay off. You know, Steepwater Band, I think they're kind of on a similar arc. Right. You know, they're kind of starting to get that, you know, that fuse lit, you know, and now they just got signed to a major label. So now they're going to have that kind of major label support, you know, and they're going to start playing those kinds of shows that come with that.
Mm-hmm.
And once that happens, you know, the sky's the limit because they're insanely talented. And you know, I hope that someday I'm lucky enough to just get on that belt to where you get thrown up into a little bit of that level and you get the chance, you know. Sure. Sometimes that's all it takes, and it takes a long time to get it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people, they're like, oh, you're in a band, you know, or I tell them, I'm like, yeah, I'm in Driving Wheel, and they go, oh, yeah, I've heard of you guys. They're never like, oh, yeah, you know, sometimes every now and again, they're like, oh, yeah, I like Driving Wheel, but it's like, oh, I've heard of you guys, which is cool.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, you know, well, you know, you got to get to the point where people go, oh, yeah, well, like how you told the guy at Moonshine, you know, Brian, you know, hey, you know, what, you know, got to put these guys on. And now I guess enough people are starting to get to that point that it's like, you know, it takes kind of some of the onus off us to self-promote.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. You guys, so you guys have been in the studio.
Yeah.
And getting ready to put out a proper release here soon.
Yes, sir. It seems like it's going to be two releases at this point.
Okay.
We're going to have like a little EP that comes out beforehand, kind of a preview type thing with a couple of songs. Bo Hill did a remix of Song For You that we're going to put on there, and we're going to put a couple of, like, you know, live things and a couple of demo songs and hurry up and get that out because everybody's just, I mean, the people that do come to shows or whatever, they're like, where's your CD? Where's your album? We get messages, why can't I buy your music on iTunes? You know, stuff like that. So, like, we've got to do something to, you know, get that out there. Because I guess if you don't have that, you really don't have anything. Sure.
Yeah, and I mean, and I think that's smart. It'd be a good way to start at least making some, bringing some income. And then you can help pay for the full album and that stuff, too. So
You know, that's all part of it. You know, like, one thing leads into the other. And, you know, we can't say enough good things about Steven, who's mixing our record in Chicago, the proper album itself, it sounds phenomenal. You know, I'll hook you up with a couple of tracks to play or whatever.
Yeah.
But it, Ryan's really super excited about it. I'm super excited about it. Ryan wants to go to Chicago and work with Steven directly for the next record, like, you know, go over song arrangements and stuff with him beforehand and record out there.
Yeah.
So that's a really good sign, you know. Yeah, everybody's getting excited about Driving Wheel again, even the people in the band, and that's a good thing. You know, Craig's all about it. He's been doing so much to help everything out. Been, you know, getting a lot of our business stuff in order with us. So it's like, you know, we're operating at a pretty good level as far as just everyone being a good teammate and stuff. Yeah. And we're really excited about all of it.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, Turner. I mean, whether you guys are a power trio, but I mean, whether it's 3, 4, 5 guys trying to get everybody all on the same page and
absolutely, anybody who's ever been, you know, married or in a relationship or anything knows how hard it can be just to get two people on the same page and get two people in the same room lined up and to do the, you know, things that need to be done. So whenever you've got three people and each one of us has a girlfriend or a wife, as the case might be, and I have a kid, you know, and Ryan just bought a house and Craig's selling his house and, you know, you got all these other things going on. We all have jobs, you know, on top of it, you know. And so you've got to align all that stuff.
Right.
You know, and no one person's any one thing is more important than any one other thing, you know, and that kind of attitude and that kind of, you know, it's really a brotherhood. That's what helps us, you know, just keep it all together, you know, at the end of the day.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. So, I know Devin, we talked about off mic a little bit with Devin Allman. He just went up to Chicago, too, and recorded his latest record up there. And is it just, is this something in the city, the Chicago blues?
You know, just like, that's part of it. There's definitely part of it. There's definitely that vibe there, you know. Chicago imparts that. You feel it. You know, there's a real history of that type of music there. So that, I think the vibe is one huge part of it. I think the other huge part of it for us, and I'm sure, you know, it's probably the same for Devin or anyone else, is just getting away from home.
Yeah.
And kind of not isolating yourself, but, you know, being able to focus yourself on the task at hand, as opposed to when you're home. Again, we've all got wives and kids and jobs and all these other things going on.
Sure.
Whereas when you go up there, you're kind of closed off from all that, and you know, this is your focus, and that's why it happens. It's not an ego trip or anything like that, or, you know, I'm gonna go record on the home of the blues. It's like, it's the closest proximate place to us to go to get away and get a really good vibe at the same time, you know, and have it be affordable because you're still in the Midwest.
Yeah,
you know, if you go to LA, woo, man.
Yeah. That's I've had a discussion with us in the past about might have been like Steve Ewing or Jerry Jost, about how the Urge, like when they were coming up in the early 90s and like they went out and recorded their album, and they talked about how like the label spent like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on it, and then like now that they can go and record that for, you know, a fraction of the price and do it on their own, independently.
That's again, you know, that's what makes it possible for us to do what we're doing right now, is that we're paying for everything kind of out of pocket.
Yeah.
We're lucky in that we have a lot of friends that are helping us out with stuff like artwork and layout, and giving us a good deal on studio time, giving us a good deal on mixing, and doing it right, and like really taking their time because they care about us and they care about the project more than they're doing it because they got paid X amount of dollars and this is their job, you know? So at the end of the day, when you know, if somebody picks up our record, what they're going to buy is they're going to buy, you know, songs that we all wrote in our living room and the artwork was put together in someone else's living room, and, you know, they're going to take like pieces of our lives home with them, you know, and that's going to be a real and tangible thing as opposed to a manufactured product.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of a lost art anymore. Even it seems with people who are doing independent records, like they're just, well, here's the cover and here's the artwork and here's the songs, and they're not putting it together like an album, like a record, like, you know, an artistic statement and something that means something to them, you know.
Yeah, that's a big part of my life and being a music fan forever. Like, I love holding on to the record, looking at the art, reading the liner notes and all that, you know.
Everything about all that, you know, you want to know where this, you know, come from, what maybe inspired it, or what, you know, the artist has to say. And, you know, some of the stuff was kind of obscure when you'd read it, or you don't know what some of it means even, but, the you know, you just you read it and you soak it up, you right. know, it becomes a part of you. I mean, that's why people start playing music in the first place, I think, because you're just such a fan.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, whenever I look at it, I try to look at it through those eyes of, like, what would I want to have out of a band? What is it that I want?
Right.
You know, not that there aren't bands doing that. There are a few, you know, Rival Sons.
Yeah.
Just put out a new album. They're awesome. Again, oh, Black yeah. Bear Smokes, Deepwater Band. Just three bands off the top of my head that are really awesome. London Souls, Vintage Trouble. You know, it's happening. Yeah. It's coming back around. And, like, anytime anybody complains about how there's no new music or anything like that, it's just because they're not listening, I guess, or they're not looking for it, because there's all kinds everywhere I know.
Yeah.
My friends' records are the best records that I can listen to. Lions of Hazelwood, right here in St. Louis, again, yeah. you know, great band with a great record and a great, you know, dude, again, can't say enough cool things about Steven and Daniel.
Yeah.
Fantastic guys, and you know, if you haven't checked them out, do it. Yeah. I'm talking to anybody listening.
You ever check out Tyler Bryan and the Shakedown?
I've heard of them, but yeah. I haven't had a chance to.
They're another band. They're young guys. They're doing it, and they're bringing back that, you know, classic rock sound still, and that's what
good.
You know, a lot of people will say, like, you know, they like this band. It's like, well, that sound's still out there. It's like, sure. you know, you just got to find it. It's not on the radio as much as it once was, but it's there still. People love that music still, you know, all the...
I liken that to all the "you should have been there" people. Yeah. It's like, back in my day, boy, yeah. we did this, and boy, we did that, and we had these bands, and it's like, you know, I mean, I'm one that, you know, as an artist and as a musician, I guess it's probably easier for me to let go of the past and let go of
yeah.
what certain songs meant to me somewhat as a kid, or what albums mean, or not even let go of them, but put them into the context that they need to be in. Whereas, you know, I can speak for myself to say that the early 90s were amazing musically for yeah. me. Like, that was my time. I remember watching the MTV Video Music Awards, and, like, the Black Crowes opened, and you had Nirvana, and the bass player throws his bass up in the air and hits himself in the right. head. John Paul Jones sits in with Lenny Kravitz, and they do Are You Gonna Go My Way. Neil Young comes out with Pearl Jam and does Rockin' in the Free World after they do Animal. You know, Guns N' Roses and Elton John doing November Rain. Red Hot Chili Peppers with P-Funk doing Give It Away. You know, and this is just one show, and that's
yeah.
that was, you know, the mainstream
sure.
at that time. So I consider myself slightly spoiled, but I have to understand that it's not the early 90s anymore.
Right.
And it's not even the mid-90s anymore. And it's definitely not the late 90s.
Yeah.
You know, music is not the same. Life is not the same. That's okay.
Sure.
You know, I adjust to that. And I look at what I like now, you know, and I still like everything that I liked when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was a huge AC/DC fan. Still am. I've you know, was a huge Guns N' Roses fan. I still am. I've expanded yeah. and broadened my range since then. But, I mean, those were huge records to me when I was a kid. The oh, Blues yeah. Brothers, Briefcase Full of Blues. When I was a kid, that was, like, the be-all, end-all.
Yeah.
That was my favorite album, man. I didn't know anything about Booker T and the MGs. Or
yeah.
I didn't know who Steve Jordan was, or who Duck Dunn and Steve Cropper were, you know, Matt Guitar Murphy. I didn't know who Tom Scott and LA Express were.
Right.
I figured all that out later.
Yeah.
I was like, when I heard Green Onions, I was like, really? It's Steve Cropper and Duck Dunn, huh? Wow. You know, and I learned about Stax Volt, you know, and I came to it from the other direction, and that's okay.
Sure.
You know, I didn't have to be there.
Yeah. You know? I kind of did the same, like, you know, and it still gets me today on how many people, like, rave about Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah.
But, like,
I love Led Zeppelin.
Well,
they're the best.
I love them too, but, like, it's more of, as I've gotten older and I've done my homework, I've kind of learned that they're, like, the best cover band ever. Like,
well, they were, but they took it another step, man. And that's yeah. a part that people don't understand, was that, you know, these were blues riffs, yeah, yeah. And these were, a lot of the lyrics were cribbed from the blues.
Sure.
But they took it and they put it up in this new package and they pumped it up, and yeah. it was like, you know, sure. it was literally on, you know, it was on heroin and cocaine.
Yeah.
You know, it was huge. It was bigger. It was badder. It was druggier.
Right.
It was more dangerous.
Yeah.
And I mean, I felt that, you know. John Paul Jones is a huge influence on me personally. John Bonham, too. They were probably, I would say, one of the preeminent rhythm sections ever in the history of rock music. Oh, yeah. And that's why those records sound so great. And that's ultimately what it comes down to. It doesn't matter who they stole from.
Right.
What matters is that those records sound amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's good stuff.
Led Zeppelin, too, you put that on. Shoot, man. Everybody starts bobbing their head. Yeah.
That's a Led Zeppelin one is like, I don't know, like 90%, you know, sampled blues material. It's like,
and they gave credit too on a lot of it. Like, Shook Me, that's, you know, that was obvious. Jeff Beck put it on his first record the year before, you know.
Yeah. That was one way. I don't know if I told it on here or not, but when I was listening to some like rock and roll expert guy, whatever, I forget what his name was, but he had like a book out and he was on Stern Show and they were all. Had this big discussion, and that's where I was hearing a lot of this stuff. And then you go and look it up, and it's all there. And it's like, but there was a guy, Holmes was his last name, but he wrote Dazed and Confused.
Okay. Yeah.
He put it on as kind of more of a folk.
Jake Holmes.
Yeah.
Jake Holmes. Yeah. Well, the Yardbirds played it initially, and it was called I'm Confused.
Yeah.
And it evolved. Paige would even pull out the bow and everything, and that song came from those days. And, yeah, the Jake Holmes version, you know, all these guys, yeah, they sued, and, yeah, they got their money, you know. But nobody wants to talk about how John Lennon got sued for Come Together by Morris Levy, who was Chuck Berry's publisher, among Lieber and Stoller and many other. He owned the publishing for lots of 50s hits. The line, "Here Come Old Flat Top," comes from a Chuck Berry song called You Can't Catch Me. And John Lennon got sued for plagiarism successfully. And that's why the Rock and Roll album came out. There's also one of the songs on the first John Lennon solo album that comes from Bringing On Home to Me. You know, everybody does it. We do it. I do it. I've written songs. It's like, oh, wait, this... Totally, I'm ripping somebody off. Yeah. Never mind, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's gonna happen. I mean, there's I think it's just music. I mean, there's only so many chords and, you know, structures you can put together in a song to where.
And if you really like something and it really sticks to you, and it's gonna come out in some fashion or another, you know, like that's part of why, you know, our band sounds the way it is because I love Led Zeppelin so much, and so does Ryan. You know, that sound, that big. Bluesy rock sound, you know, blues on steroids.
That's what what I said about Tyler Bryant. Like, that's how those guys, like, those guys are like, if you close your eyes and listen to the music, or even just watching the show too, like, because they wear like the they got like the same pants, like it looks like, you know, Led Zeppelin up there, like, and they just I mean, they're a fantastic band. Like, I like, and their live show is just incredible too. Like, Caleb, their drummer. And I don't know how much he still does it, but I saw him at the Gramophone one night in a small club, and they...
Which is a shame that they're closing, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they're still... What I kind of read, they're going to still do... It's just not going to be... it's going to be more of a restaurant first than the music.
Oh, wow.
They're not going to... So, they're still going to do some shows every now and then, but it's going to be more like monthly or something than their... main source or so.
Gotcha.
So I was like, it's kind of, it still stinks to hear that live music is kind of not doing as well as they wanted to.
But in that area, there are a lot of venues.
Sure.
I mean, there's a ton right there.
There's also a lot of sandwich places too. So
I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
You can't tell other people what to
hopefully
do.
It works out. But
yeah, I'd like to play a show with Tyler and them. That's usually the way that. We get to see other bands, you know, and get to hang out with other bands is we'll play a show with them.
Yeah. I mean, it's all Brad is lead guitar, Brad Whitford, and his dad was in Aerosmith.
Yeah.
So that that was a big foot in the door for them because they got to go on the road with Aerosmith and they played also with Heart and some other, you know, big bands, and
that'd be awesome.
Gave him big exposure.
Sure.
I mean, it's not, I don't think it obviously it helps having his dad, but they also earned it by their sound. Like they're,
sure.
They're,
you have to be good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the part that people don't get, you know. Everybody talks about Jacob Dylan or Julian Lennon, you know, any of these people. And it's like, well, they had to be good, first of all, you know. You can't just come in and be like, oh, I'm so-and-so's kid.
Sure.
Yeah, give me a record deal.
Yeah, Same thing with even Devin Allman.
Sure.
Mentioned,
like, he earned his stripes the hard way, really. And in a way, he almost kind of, you know, I mean, he probably could have treaded on the last name, you know, in his heritage. But instead, you know, he did what any artist does and followed his own path, which, you know, that's what you have to do to grow. I mean, I don't want to be the same guy I was or held by, you know, it's almost a good thing if your parent isn't a musician or whatever, because then you don't have to live up to anything.
Sure.
You know, like, you know, I mean, my dad played guitar and everything, but he wasn't, like, known all around town as, you know, anybody. You know, it wasn't Greg Allman, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, to step out from behind that and to, you know, forge his own sound and his own path and his own voice is just, you know, again, kudos. And he's another person that, you know, it's just an affirmation that, you know, when you stick to your guns and you do what you do, eventually people will recognize it. You know, you just got to keep doing it and keep plugging away.
Yeah. That's my idea. Like, that's with the show, man. That's what we've been trying to do, just trying to keep plugging away and hopefully, you know, keep good things coming towards us. But, you know, that's how hard work pays off, man. That's what it all boils down to.
Yep. It always takes elbow grease. You always have to roll up your sleeves, you know.
If anything comes easy, it's, you know, it's probably not going to last.
And it's not worth it, or somebody's going to pull the rug out from under you, because, I mean, somebody hands something to you, they can probably take it away.
Sure.
Whereas if you go and get it and take it yourself, you know, you probably they're less apt to come at you, if that makes any sense.
So what's some of your first albums? You mentioned Blues Brothers and stuff. Like, what do you remember what your first record was?
Sure. I mean, like, everybody or anyone from when I grew up, from when I came about, which was the 70s, you know, you came to it through the Beatles, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I was a huge John Lennon fan, a huge Beatles fan. I loved Fleetwood Mac Rumors, Alice Cooper, Welcome to My Nightmare. Those are some of the first records that really, really made a huge impact on me. Bob Seger, Night Moves, from my mom's record collection. And she got me Heart, Dreamboat Annie for Valentine's Day. So that one, White Lightning and Wine, Sing Child Sing, that just fantastic record. And I just, you know, went from there. I just started raiding my dad's records, you know, and just grabbing stuff that looked interesting. And that's how I found Mountain. You know, he had an album called Mountain Climbing, and I was like, this looks wicked.
Yeah.
So I put it on, and it was great.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
Leslie West is a
so everything from Mountain to, you know, Cat Stevens and Neil Young on my dad's side, Black Sabbath, Kiss, to on my mom's side, you know, more mainstream type stuff like Fleetwood Mac, Peter Frampton, Bob Seger. And you know, I was a big Beatles fan, and from there, you know, it just kind of sprang. For a long time, I didn't listen to anything modern at all. The things that dragged me into the modern age, I liked Van Halen a lot.
Yeah.
And Motley Crue. And then when Guns N' Roses came, they really kind of flipped my world upside down. And people don't talk about that enough, but it really wasn't Nirvana that killed the hair bands. It was Guns N' Roses. You know, they made everything else that was going on at that time irrelevant.
Yeah.
You know, they really did. You know, they were like the Stones, man. That's why they got to open for the Stones.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, they were real bad. They were like Led Zeppelin, but for that era.
Right.
And no other band could compare with them for me until I discovered the Black Crowes when I was, you know, when they came around, 13, I was 12. I think I went and seen them for my 14th birthday, and you know, after that, it was just kind of all bets were off, you know, and then I absorbed and went through, you know, the Beck and Beastie Boys kind of thing, and, you know, listened to a little bit of hip-hop, but not, you know, I didn't go, you know.
Yeah, at least that was the good generation for hip hop. And then
music was better, period, no matter what kind it was. It seemed like I liked the metal back then. I listened to Pantera.
Oh, yeah.
And I listened, you know, of course everybody listened to Metallica. I went through a real big, like, you know, metal phase where I listened to a lot of Megadeth and Slayer and all that. I was around 12 or 13. Got into that, and I did a little, you know, I dabbled in electronica, you know, kind of got a feel for what things were, and I've discovered there's good and bad in all kinds of music.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I was about 17 or 18, I started getting into the Grateful Dead a lot. It was right around the time Jerry died, really, so okay. I was probably 15 when I started really getting into them, and through that, I got into country music. You know, that's where I developed my love for, like, you know, now I love Merle Haggard, I love Conway Twitty,
sure.
You know, all that kind of stuff. All the old classic guys that my grandparents listened to that when I was a little kid, I didn't want anything to do with it. Right. You know, that was like old people music.
Yeah.
But now, you know, if, you know, you play loud screaming guitar music all night, sometimes the last thing you want to listen to is loud screaming guitar music.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you want to put something on that's nice and pretty.
Sure.
And a lot of those early Nashville records are really nice and pretty. Patsy Cline records are very pretty sounding. Yeah. With all the strings and the lush orchestration and all that, they're really, you know, really symphonic in their scope. So there's that, and then there's the wailing blood on the guts on the sawdust floor, you know, type of rollicking country, which is, you know, really close to my heart too for several different reasons. Yeah. So, you know,
that's another sound like that's still like that's what I love seeing, like Sturgill Simpson now, like how big his career is becoming.
Yep. Awesome,
and he's he's another one, like, he just sold out the old Rock House in like a day. It's cool to see that, you know, he's got that throwback sound, but like it's still relevant today just as much as it was then, and like he's still,
I think if what you do is earnest and true,
yeah,
that people pick up on it and they're going to respond to it.
Right.
You know, that's why, you know, I don't talk bad about anybody's music, you know, like I use Nickelback as a good frame of reference because they're the butt of so many jokes now, and I'm just like, they're selling more records than you, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are buying them, and a lot of people like them. And guess what? A lot of people go to their shows and have a good time.
Still sell out arenas all over the world.
I couldn't really name you one song, and I can't. You know, I've never seen them before. I don't know those guys, but you know what? I bet that they really like what they do, and I bet that they really believe in it, and that's why it's successful.
Sure,
you know. That's why it hits a note with someone, obviously, somewhere. Yeah. You know, all those people talking smack, I bet, you know, 8 out of 10 of them either liked Nickelback or at one time bought Nickelback and thought they liked Nickelback.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once it became fashionable to bash them, then they started to not like them. You know,
yeah.
It had nothing to do with what they like or don't like.
I think anybody that, like, sort of peaks as fast as they did and like becomes that mainstream and you know, household name sort of thing, like eventually
backlash.
Yeah, eventually people are just going to start getting tired of, you know, it's like, and I think a lot of that comes from radio, just oversaturating the radio
play. A lot of it, I think it comes from the production aesthetic that we have today and the playing aesthetic, whereas if something's successful, they're going to try and do it again and do it again and run it into the ground.
Right.
That's where the backlash comes from, like, because I do know enough about Nickelback to know that all their records sound a lot alike.
Yeah.
The guitar tones really do sound really similar, and they sound similar to other bands, like that production style, that really compressed production style.
I think their producer's Joey Moy, and he's also the same guy that produced, like, now he's producing Florida Georgia Line.
Sure.
So a lot of people think that Florida Georgia Line sound a lot like Nickelback on their
set. Well, they do.
So that's... So that's the same thing, I think, like,
and we opened for Florida Georgia Line, and they're really nice guys, and they liked our band a lot, and we thought they were really cool guys, too, so there you go.
Where was that at?
At Mojo's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Believe it or not, right before they just blew up,
sure.
Man.
Yeah,
and the place was packed, too. Yeah. There was, like, 300 people that hated us. I mean, really, it was one of the most tense situations that I've ever been in. Ryan almost got in a fight.
With the fans, or
the fans just could not stand us. They were all their, the, you know, I mean, think about it. It's Columbia, So who's going to come at that time? It was all the 14 and 15 year olds and 16 year olds, you know, and so they weren't, you know, maybe if they were able to drink, they weren't very good at it, you know. So, like, it was, you know.
I saw Florida Georgia Line in, first I saw them October 11 open up for Brantley Gilbert at the Pageant, a sold out show.
Yep.
And then they came back to town, maybe 2 months later, and they played the Blueberry Hill in the Duck Room.
Nice.
For like 200 people.
Yeah, in the basement.
Yeah. And then, and that was a cool show. It was, and I mean, like I said, Brian, I like the early stuff they put out. Like, it's, you know, their independent stuff where,
sure,
you know, you really got who they were. And then now they kind of, like, it's evolved into a much, much larger thing. Like, you know, now they're selling every song. So,
hey, and that, I think that was what they wanted to do. That was what they signed up for. Because I don't think that thing happens if you don't sign up for it. Like, you know, I always look kind of more to Neil Young as a model of doing things a lot of times. And, you know, whenever he had his biggest hit, he put out a live album of a bunch of songs nobody had ever heard before, and it was really murky, and it was not suitable for radio at all. You know, and the way you put it was, you said that, you know, having a number one hit kind of put him in the middle of the road, and so he headed for the ditch. Said it was a lot rougher a ride, but he sure did meet a lot of interesting people. And that's kind of what I'm in it for. I'm in it for that part of it. Like, I don't want to be such a huge success that I'm away from home all the time, and I'm constantly touring, and I've got photos and, you know, all that kind of thing. Like, that's not me, and I'll throw a temper tantrum and it won't happen. Like, it just won't. You know, I've kind of already, you know, I'm happy with the way things are going. Like, if anything else happens on top of it, we look at it as we're already a success in our eyes. Like, anything that happens on top of what we already have is just gravy, because we already get paid good.
Yeah.
You know, we already, you know, write songs and play them the way we want to, and you know, record things and have them come out the way we want to. So, I mean, if somebody wants to better the deal that we have, then I'm all ears. But I don't, you know, for our level, there's not much better deal going right now than to be independent.
Right.
You know, and to handle all this stuff ourselves. And it's tiring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more work than it would be. But we get a bigger piece of the pie. And, you know, the math splits up a lot better that way. And it's just, there's more of a real sense of accomplishments. Like, we did this. This is ours. As opposed to when you, you know, and I'm not knocking anybody. And I'll sell out, you know. I mean, give me something to sign. Where do I sign? I'll sell out. But it's got to be a really good deal, you know, and I don't think I could sign up for the Florida Georgia Line deal. I'm not knocking those guys, and again, remember, they were really nice to us.
For sure.
And they were super great players. Like, dude with the spiked hair, he can shred on guitar, dude. That's, oh, my God, he's sick.
Brian Bonds.
Yeah, Brian, he's really super nice, and he's just a killer guitar player, and really, they dug our band. They thought that, you know, we had some, and they were, like, encouraging to us, like, you know, don't let, you know, because they could hear what, you know, people were saying, you know, that the fans weren't happy, you know, or whatever, but we played our set, and we played it the way we play, and we didn't tailor it for for a country audience, you know. We came out there rocking, you know, and we thought that they would be okay with it, but, you know, we weren't twangy enough with our rock, I guess. You know, and it's just the way it is.
That's what, I mean, that's a, that's what they probably don't realize, is that, like, there's, I mean, obviously you guys are very different than Florida Georgia Line, but there's a lot of similarities as well. Like, that, all that Florida Georgia Line and Jason Aldean, all that's all rock guitars.
Rock and roll music. Yeah. And it's really close musically to me. Like, this is what I noticed when I worked the Willie Nelson Country Throwdown, because I live in a vacuum. Like, a musical vacuum. I really do. I've got my records and the bands that I like, and I, you know, if I get latch onto something, that's cool, but really it's got to stand out to really make an impact on me. What I noticed about the bands that I was hearing while I was working at the show was a lot of them sounded like Shaman's Harvest. You know, musically, it's a lot of the same type of riffs, a lot of the same down-tuned guitars. You know, the songs are written the same way. And I was like, okay, you know, like, so this is where country music is now. Like, I don't consider that country music at all. It's not to me. It's rock and roll. It's modern rock.
Sure.
With a twang.
Yeah.
That's the side that comes with, and then
yeah, and it's I think I mean it's the twang, but it's also the lyric content, like
sure,
a country song is more about drinking. I mean, not that it's
the modern country songs. Yeah, you go drinking down to the creek, yeah. Catfish dinner. Right. Yeah, so you know, there's a formula, there's a template, and you know, you can write song after song after song like that if you want to. Sure,
but I mean, and people always like there was a thing that went around on Facebook that I thought was perfect because it was like. How to write each one of the songs, and it was like, for blues, it was like complain about your problems, and then like a 3-minute guitar solo, and then it's like, and that's just like all these various genres, they all have a format, you know, it's like there's you know, people always want to say country music all sounds the same. It's like, well if you got that attitude,
all music sounds the same. Yeah. Period. You know, because there's only. You know, 12 notes or 13 notes in the Western scale. So if you're going on that aspect, you know, you might want to get into a raga where the intro is 30 minutes, you know, and then you want to tell me about music sounding the same. I don't know. You know, it all depends on what people's tastes run at. Sure. But like, you know, for me, that's why driving wheel, that's why things move so slow. Yeah. That's why we don't write songs on a template or made to order. Conversely, that's why it takes so much longer to write songs. That's why it takes our records so long to get done.
Right.
You know, is because not only are we, you know, we're taking our time, but we want to make sure it's not manufactured, that this is what we really believe in. Or if it was something that was like, yeah, cool, whatever, it takes up time on the record, you just fill it up and ship it out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, not what we're about. And we're at the point where we can... Just we have the luxury of taking our time and making sure everything is the way we need it to be before we present it to the public, because this might be our only shot.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Probably is. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think about it like that, because if you think about it on that level, then it becomes overwhelming and it becomes this other thing. You know? Whereas if you just stay in the moment and you keep concentrating at it, you're there.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I don't know, man. Want to wrap this up?
Sure. Yeah.
You can catch Driving Wheel, like I said earlier, Friday, January 23rd, Moonshine Blues Bar.
That is correct.
Stay tuned. We'll throw some couple tunes on the end here, and you can
hear for yourself.
Yeah.
Whether or not you want to come out and brave the cold on January 23rd. It might be a good night to get out by then, though. You
know, yeah.
Everybody's saved up a little money after Christmas.
There's plenty of whiskey to keep you warm down there. So
Happy New Year, all that stuff. You know, come out, get down.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. Eat some barbecue. They got the best food in St. Charles.
Yeah, Hendrick's Barbecue is right up on top if you've never been. Killer barbecue. And then you can stumble downstairs and have a hell of a time. Listen to some good rock blues music.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We'll see you out there. Thank you. Thanks, Jeremy.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Bird Dog, thanks you too. Yeah.
My daddy told me when I was 8 years old, said, boy, you stand your ground. When push comes to shove, drop the gloves and lay that bastard out.
Rock paper podcast, y'all.